I think I overslept in my cryo bed. Hey, what time is it? What? The 24th century?
I would love to wake up aboard the Enterprise.
Yeah, blow your mind.
Spoiler alert, some old-time enemies show up.
Mr. Roddenberry, tell us, who's the ultimate villain? Who's it gonna be? Please, please, we're on the edge of our seats.
Who? The Romulans? Yes, I said Romulans. Is the Great Bird off his roost?
Caw! Caw!
Thank you, Great Bird!
Get ready for a mind-bender of a season ender on episode 25 of STTNG's coming at you right about... now!
Do this thing, number one. Count it down.
I'm going to count this down, starting with the five.
Yes!
It'll probably lead to the four, followed by, I don't know, I'm thinking three, then two and one.
Yay!
Yay, I'm so happy for the podcast.
Jimmy, is that you?
Yes, it's me, and I want to say welcome, everybody, to STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast. I'm your new best friend, Admiral Andrew, and with me is...
Commander Dave E. Dave. Yeah, that was my. I was putting on my Picard voice.
Oh, is that what that was?
I think we've learned how much people appreciate me doing my Picard impression over all these 25 episodes.
Is that the word we're going to use? Appreciate? I can't, Dave. I got to tell you, there's something crazy going on here. We are actually in the last episode of the first season.
I'm giddy. How many episodes were there altogether?
178 episodes. So we're going to be here for the rest of our lives.
163 episodes left.
Wow. Is that all?
I figured we'd made a dent in this sucker, but when you see 163, I mean, come on.
Well, I also want to make a point of the fact that this is the end of our discussion of Next Gen first season. This is not the end of our first season. We still have a couple more episodes to go. So we're going to have a sort of season wrap-up episode where we talk about the best and the worst.
And after that, Andrew, we have this really special bonus episode that we put together where Andrew and I watch the first next-gen movie.
Generations. For the loyal listener, you know that Dave and I are several light years away from each other, but this one we actually recorded in the same room.
Yeah, that's the only episode we sat together.
Yeah.
And fellowship. Star Trek fellowship.
Dave, what are we doing here today?
This episode is episode 26, actually. The Neutral Zone. This episode, the Enterprise D is ordered to investigate the Neutral Zone because there's been disappearances of several outposts, and they're trying to figure out who could be disappearing these outposts. Some people might think it's the Romulan Empire for no apparent reason.
Huh.
The Romulans, they jump to the Romulans.
Yeah.
In this far future of Next Gen, we haven't heard from the Romulans in over 50 years.
Wow, that's a long time.
Yeah, I think so. The tension is high as the bridge crew tries to plan for whatever may come while investigating.
Uh-huh.
Adding to all this, Data and Worf discover three survivors on a derelict craft, frozen cryogenically from Earth and then like shot out into space.
What?
Yeah, can you believe it? They bring the trio back to the Enterprise D.
Uh-huh.
These three sleepers end up being in the way of what's going on in the Neutral Zone.
Uh-huh.
Picard and crew prepare to get acquainted with their old adversaries.
Do they now?
Will the Enterprise be up to the task of meeting Romulans again after all these years?
Who knows?
And what are those little stinkers the Romulans want anyways? Will someone please get Waylon up here to figure this all out?
We've made fun of the fact that Waylon, the 20th century expert who ends up getting shot in The Big Goodbye, right, is the silliest character ever, because why would you have that guy? And finally, here's a use for him. Ta-da!
I know. It's funny. It like, why not bring that guy back?
What's he doing?
He got shot, for crying out loud. I think we assume he's still alive, right?
The important thing is that they brought these people back to life, right? They were dead,
right,
and they brought him back to life. I think, you know, Waylon had a flesh wound. I think he's got to be okay.
But what's funny is that they come across this craft that's floating off into space, and I think it's going to be obliterated by some kind of star or something, right?
Yes.
Data's the curious one. He's like, hey, maybe I should go over there and check it out, you know?
Right.
And he doesn't know that there's any life forms on it. He just thinks it's this old relic from Earth, and Riker's really irritated because Riker wants to make sure that they're ready to go as soon as Picard, who's off off ship investigating something, isn't slowed down from whatever his task is. And he's irritated that Data is going to go over there. And then Data and Worf go over to investigate and find these sleepers in these cryogenic tanks.
But it's a weird moment in the episode because both Picard and Riker are upset with Data when it's clear that, you know, he made the right decision. He brought these people back. They're survivors. They could be revived. They may have been dead. And even Picard even says, you know, why would you bring them back? And Data's like, because that's our job, dude.
Where's your prime directive now, Data?
Yeah, seriously.
It's funny because this is human life. And this whole episode is so much about human life and how important it is to honor, you know, your human life in the future. And it's irritating to Picard that they find these people and they're kind of foils for the episode. But really, the episode really is about these people. It's not very much about the Romulans at all.
Well, it is and it isn't. And this is the part that's particularly frustrating. This is my favorite TNG's phrase. We've talked about this before, that this kind of dual narrative that they sometimes put into this show, as if the A plot wasn't enough, as if the either these sleepers or the Romulans weren't enough.
Yeah.
There was no need for it. But apparently this was supposed to be a multi-part episode.
Makes sense.
But when they realized it wasn't a longer episode, they really should have separated them out a little bit.
Yes.
Because I go back to the original series where we first met the Romulans. It was called Balance of Terror, I believe. Maybe Balance of Power. Balance of something.
Balance of something, number one.
It's the first season original series episode where the Romulans have kind of been doing the same thing that they're being suspected of here, is they've been hitting outposts and disappearing because of their cloaking device. Kirk and the Enterprise is assigned to go out there and take care of this. They, you know, have this sort of ongoing space battle that's one of the better space battles on that show. It really pits Kirk as a captain against the Romulan captain, who's played by Mark Leonard, who will, you know, famously play Sarek.
Spock's dad, everyone.
Right. But it's a fantastic episode because it cuts back and forth between the Enterprise and the Romulan ship, and you see the Romulan commander kind of dealing with the folks on his ship. The Romulans in that episode are not cartoons. They're not like two-dimensional beings. Mark Leonard's character is very complicated, and he's trying to do what's right for, you know, his people and get home safely. And sort of oddly enough, you know, he's also being pushed by someone on his ship to attack and destroy the Enterprise, much in the way that Picard is getting pushed by the next-gen crew to attack and destroy the Romulans when you see them. And it's one of the few episodes where you really have respect for Kirk as a captain. Wrath of Khan does this, to use strategy, to make the right decisions.
I'm thinking of stuff and working it out.
You know what's weird about this script, Dave, is that it's actually supposed to be based on a fan fiction.
Really?
Yes, that's what my incredible in-depth research told me.
So it's fan fiction because they were deep in the writer's strike, even though the writers weren't actually striking at this point.
You know what? This writer's strike timeline is very confusing to me.
Well, here's the thing. The fall of 88 is where the shows were actually delayed, and different shows handled it differently, but some shows started late. Some shows like Star Trek ended up putting out these phony episodes where they didn't actually write the episode, but the writer's strike was affecting them in the spring as well.
Can I ask you a question? At any point, were the writers maybe striking for better beverages? Were they thirsty?
Oh, of course they were. Hold on.
Wait. I know I'm thirsty.
This one goes out from the Bay Area.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
You know what I call that?
And that's your delightful Perrier. I am again back to the Boob Lee.
Hold on a second.
Yeah, how's that?
I mean, I don't want to take too much of a detour, but Perrier has come out with these new cans, as if in kind of commemorating the fact that we're on episode 25 here. But it's this whole new design. The top of the can is like kind of this copper now, and the little pull tab is green. I mean, it's a much more attractive can, but it really kind of screws up my can design theory. I've been saving these cans, you know, for a future.
Well, my question is then: are those the classic cans? So those have become even more valuable because they're now the discontinued classic can.
Imagine this. Even right now, some lucky fan could be owning one of these cans. I mean, they could have this can in their possession somewhere, maybe on a bookshelf, maybe one of those cute little, what do you call those, shadow boxes? Oh, my God.
Or maybe, you know, maybe they could keep it in the garage and use it to crush scorpions.
Right. There you go. There you go. I have a little bit of housekeeping from last episode. I don't know if you remember, Andrew. We went on this whole tirade about where's the beef, which was my fault. And I insisted that where's the beef was part of the presidential campaign of 1988. And I insisted.
Yes.
I insisted that George Bush Sr. used the term where's the beef. And I would just like to tell you,
yes,
for once, I've actually gone back and researched a little something to find out.
Oh,
okay,
my God.
It was not George Bush Sr., I'm sorry to say, but it was Michael Dukakis. I don't know if you remember Dukakis.
I, of course, remember Michael Dukakis.
Michael Dukakis used this term when he was referring to Gary Hart, who was also running for the Democratic nomination at the time, right?
Thank you.
Okay, everybody put that in your diaries, okay? It's very important information.
The one fan who is obsessively sort of racking their brain over that can now finally get some sleep. Good night, fan.
It's the podcast that's not afraid to never follow up on any of the details that we promise to follow up on. Okay, there.
Excellent.
I know there's more than one fan that gets irritated by that because I've heard from them. Finally, there you go. Where's the beef? All right.
So let me ask you a question.
Yes.
You figured this out, but you didn't figure out the writer's strike.
Everybody is so interested in the writer's strike of 1988, for God's sakes.
Well, when we get to that Riker Has a Fever clip show, you'll be interested.
That's season
Riker
two.
Has a fever. Riker has a fever.
Riker,
it's a clip show.
Commander Riker, you give me fever.
Ding, 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 ding. With your clip show.
Is that your bone you're playing on? Back me up, number one.
So anyway, this was supposed to be like a multi-part season ender.
Yes.
They had been teasing the Romulans for a while. You know, they were mentioned in Angel One that they were in such a tear and hurry to get off that planet and to beat that virus that was on the ship because there was some issues with the Romulans at the neutral zone.
It's a funny thing because like Angel One's a perfect example of an episode where you hardly care about what's happening in the actual episode. And then to plant some really important information like that. It I remember it, but it's only because I just watched this like four or five times during, you know, a rewatch. It's just like, how could you retain that information? Oh my God. Wait, hold on, honey. They mentioned the Romulans again. Can you believe it? I mean,
well, I will actually disagree with you there because Trek fans, I mean, the real dedicated diehard Trek fans will like it. And those are the folks who are cataloging this stuff. Those are goofballs like us.
I know.
Who are doing podcasts about it. I mean, they're absolutely locked in on that.
I know. I'm not saying that. I get that. And I love that kind of stuff. I love it myself. But I'm just saying, like, when you have a ho-hum episode like Angel One, and then you end it with, like, where are we off to next, Captain? And then, I've heard a rumor that the Romulans might be, like, come on. I mean,
oh, sure. And we mentioned that when we talked about the episode, and that's actually got my antenna up.
Yeah.
And I got excited and I thought maybe something was going to happen. But of course, nothing did.
That's what I mean. And then nothing happens. Mr. Roddenberry, tell us, who's the ultimate villain? Who's it going to be? Please, please. We're on the edge of our seats.
I think it should be a guy in a mullet. Caw, caw.
How about they're wearing these like quilted suit like my grandmother makes?
Oh, you mean the Romulans? I thought you were talking about Angel One.
You're talking about the guy in the mullet as the the Romulans with those haircuts.
I think it needs to be Ramses.
He's the ultimate villain?
Caw, caw.
Thank you, Great Bird.
So the idea was, you know, the Romulans are getting teased all along. And this was supposed to be the introduction of the Borg, right? So spoiler alert.
Yeah. Wait, hold on. We find out through the episode that they keep going to these outposts and they've disappeared. They're totally gone. The outpost is and we're thinking that it's the Romulans that are somehow destroying these places or obliterating them or sucking them up or whatever they're doing with them. It's implied that it's the Romulans. And what I think is weird, and I never knew this until we started on this podcast, that the Borg were introduced so early here. I mean, they don't introduce them in the actual episode.
No, they don't. They're not going to show up until that Q who in the second season.
Okay.
And in the end, it's better because it leads to that best of both worlds, a season-ending cliffhanger between season 3 and season 4. And by then, the show is really firing on all pistons. I hate to think what would have happened if they had introduced the Borg here, I don't think it would have been as successful. Let's just say that.
If you remember the last episode, Conspiracy, we had this whole internal threat, like these parasites that were taking over members of Starfleet in the upper echelon of Starfleet, which was exciting and really weird. And this threat that was implied that might come back, and it never comes back.
Right.
You know, I think you're right that if we had seen early Borg, what would they have been like? What kind of makeup would they have? I mean, would it be as impressive and as scary as it is later on when we finally get to them?
Right. I mean, there's a lot of layers to Best of Both Worlds that just would not have worked at this point that we can get to when we get to Best of Both Worlds. In the end, you know, it leads to kind of a thud of an end to the first season. In retrospect, I'm good with it because we're going to get the Best of Both Worlds later. And season two is going to end with a thud too because of the writer's strike.
Agreed. And I think it just shows you that the season was clunky. And just like many first seasons of a show, they're figuring things out. And even at the end, even up until this last episode, they're figuring stuff out because we had a perfectly acceptable ending to the season, which was episode 24. I mean, that would have been, you know, they didn't wrap it up, but it would have been a way to end it.
Oh, you mean know? Conspiracy?
Conspiracy, yeah. That would have been a
25.
Nope. That would have been an appropriate ending to the show.
Is it? Wait a second. It's episode 25, isn't it?
24, please. You're killing me, number one.
No, it's episode 24 of our show. Oh my God, I can't believe we're going back to this. It's episode 24 of our show. But it's episode 25 of Next Gen.
Hold on, a little behind the scenes, everyone. Andrew.
Oh no, you're right. It actually is.
Andrew, the only show I care about is our show, okay? I don't care what flipping numbering system they use.
No, you're right. It actually is.
What I love is that we're, this is like 25 episodes into it, we're still doing it. We're still doing it.
We're not going to do it in season two. Season two will be, you know, will be in sync.
Yes. I got to say this though. I have to say this because some people may not have listened to every darn episode of our podcast. There's some counting confusion in the numbering of the episodes because hold on. I thought we were having an earthquake, but we're not. Because I live in the busy downtown and sometimes big trucks go by and they just,
Dave lives in the heart of a major metropolitan center.
When they syndicated the show, they took the movie, which was 2 hours long, and they separated it into two separate episodes. And so when you see the numbering for Next Generation, it's episode one and two are two parts of the movie. And so they don't really number the series properly, and it's caused nothing but confusion for us for the whole season.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you still talking about that?
Go to sleep, little Andrew.
I'm gonna take this part of the podcast. I'm going to cut it out. And I'm just going to make it on an endless loop and use it when I'm trying to sleep. The thing for me is finally Romulans. I love the Romulans. They're my favorites. I was dying to see some Romulans.
I love you, Romulans.
And it's so anticlimactic that the Romulans have been teased. We've been waiting for them all the time. And the only thing they do is sit there in their little seats next to each other and make some heavy-handed threats, and then that's it.
Yeah, this is at the end of the episode when we finally get to the encounter with the Romulans, and we see them only on, you know, the view screen of the Enterprise.
But I have to say, the new Romulan warbird, it uncloaks in front of the Enterprise-D, and that gets me every time. It is such a cool scene. It's like, here they are. First they do a thing. Let me lay this out for a minute. Because first they make some moves.
Wait, hold on a second. Can I turn your music on first?
Sure.
Andrew's Tech Corner. Is it Tech Corner?
No, this is not a Tech Corner thing.
Oh, it isn't? All right, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry to disappoint you.
Okay.
They do this cool little feint where they're trying to trick Picard into opening fire on them, right?
Right.
And then he doesn't, and then they uncloak. And the uncloaking is fantastic. First of all, it's very dramatic. When they uncloak, it's unnerving because that ship dwarfs the Enterprise-D. It's a fearsome-looking ship.
Massive.
I've always loved the original Romulan warbird design, and I gotta say, I love this design, but it's silly.
Why do you say it's silly? I was really impressed by it. I forgot that this ship showed up right there. Wow, that's the Romulan ship. I remember it from all the other seasons later on.
It's a silly design because of the middle of the ship. So there's like that giant, it's almost like an oval in the back.
Right.
And what happens if you're at the top of the ship? And it's huge, right? And then you're like, oh man, I left my disruptor downstairs. You got to go all the way over to the left or the right, then go all the way down.
Well, that's just like what's going on the Enterprise, too. I mean, you know, the idea that you have to take the lift all the way down to deck, you know, 300 and whatever to go to the gym. It's pretty far.
No, the turbo lift makes sense because it's going up and down, maybe a little left and right. Here, you don't have a, I don't even know if they have turbo lifts because how is it going to go?
You're saying that the parts of the ship are not connected to each other. Is that what you're trying to say?
Look at the design of that ship. I'm saying it's like a crushed donut. It's got that great bird head in the front.
Yes.
And then in the back is an oval. The middle is empty just because it's a bitchin' looking design.
Okay, it looks good, Ryan.
But again, if you're on the top deck in the middle there,
right,
and you left your quilted tunic in the bottom deck, it's going to take you like 3 weeks to get there.
Hey, honey, look at me. Look up. And then you like look up and like 7,000 stories away. You're like waving at each other. I'll see you next June.
So they redesigned the Romulans too. And this is the other thing. It's kind of shocking when you see them because apparently like the Klingons, Romulan evolution involves some brow action.
Yeah. And this is my thing that I've been kind of railing against all season is this gosh darn brow heavy stuff. There's so many appliances being used, and poor Michael Dorn has to wear this giant forehead around because Klingons had this evolutionary leap back in Star Trek, the motion picture, to make the Klingons look more brutal and scary.
Right.
Just in case somebody hasn't seen the original series, the Kirk series, the Klingons were human beings with ears like Spock. They just had pointy ears. And
sometimes.
So were the Romulans.
Sometimes they had rounded ears.
Did they? Klingons?
I'm trying to remember. In Trouble with Tribbles, I don't remember them having pointed ears.
Okay, but did the Romulans have pointy ears?
The Romulans look just like the Vulcans. And in the first Romulan episode, that's part of the tension, is that, you know, the Romulans are identified as an offshoot, that they're connected to the Vulcans, so they look like Mr. Spock.
Right,
and everyone's like, "What?"
Yes,
but here now, instead, it looks like the Klingons and the Vulcans have had a baby, because they still have some of the Vulcan traits, like the pointy ears and the upswept eyebrows. But now they got some brow going.
They have some big old brow appliances, and again, I got to tell you, I mean, I wish I could go back in time and beg the great bird not to do this, because it's just so unnecessary. It's like, we get it. They're aliens. And what I love about the original series is that, you know, it's a show. Actors are playing aliens in outer space, and we're believing the illusion of it, right? Because if you came across any of these races in outer space, they wouldn't look anything like humans.
Boys, I've been thinking about this. We can't ask the audience to suspend disbelief unless they have some kind of clue that these are aliens. And you know what says aliens to me? A brow. A big suborbital ridge.
Holy shit. Hold on, boys. Write this down. Just a second. Gosh darn it.
The bumpier, the better.
Let me ask you this, Great Bird. What do you think the actors are going to think when they have to put on these, like, prosthetics every week? Don't you think that's going to be difficult?
Well, they may complain, but wait till you see these great quilted outfits and wonderful wigs.
Right. So the other feature that the Romulans have is these haircuts that are akin to what we've seen on the Vulcans in early series. And then I think we had one Vulcan show up this season, too.
But yeah, it's a modified, some sort of weird modified bowl cut.
Right.
And what's ridiculous, and this is a criticism that plenty of folks have about plenty of shows.
Okay.
This notion of the monoculture, that everyone in Romulus has this stupid ass haircut.
Right.
So it's supposed to be a planet, you know, that leads an empire. you would expect there to be the same kind of diversity in style and presentation that you see in the planet Earth. But not on Romulus. There's only one barber, and he's making his way around the planet, and he's in a hurry. So he brings his bowl.
Right. Yeah, so it's just like a straight line across their hairdo in the front. And what's funny, though, is like maybe they don't get haircuts. Maybe their hair just is that way. It just grows to that length.
If evolution produced a brow, it could produce that haircut. Right. Poor Tasha Yar, or poor Denise Crosby, when she comes back as a Romulan, that haircut,
oh my God.
That haircut does not suit her face shape at all.
You're getting deep into it.
Commander Sela.
So our late, great Yar, who died a couple episodes back, the actress comes back as her daughter.
Her half-Romulan daughter, which save it, folks. Just make a note. Put it up.
Yeah.
Look ahead on your calendar. Do the math. We're coming out every other week.
Put that in your diary right next to the thing about where's the beef, okay?
Yeah. October, you know, 17th, 2026, we'll tell you everything you need to know.
Never date the podcast, number one. We're ahead of our time.
The Romulans are going to have some strong episodes ahead. I mean, they simply are. I think they get undercut by the Cardassians. The Cardassians, damn it. A lot of the Cardassian story seems like it would really be a good Romulan story.
And they're a huge part of Star Trek, and not just this series, but others. And
well, because it gives them leeway, right? I mean, to introduce a whole new race, you're not dealing with such a valuable property, right? It's like, oh, don't do things with the Vulcans that might shake up the status quo. We won't be able to use them later.
Yeah, I get that.
The reunification plot that we're going to get also in later seasons, and this will be like in 2030 when we're doing this one, where Spock comes back and he's trying to get the Vulcans and Romulans to sort of resolve their differences.
Wait, hold on. Spock comes back onto this show. Spock shows up on actual Next Gen in the future.
That is correct. And his mission is to help the Romulans and the Vulcans sort of reunite, hence reunification. The problem, of course, being is that plot is never resolved and we never see Spock again or hear anything about what happened.
Funny.
But it does seem like they're going a different direction with the Romulans. And again, we won't see the Romulans when Next Gen ends, the television series. We're not going to see them until the final film, the delightful
Nemesis. We get them in the Picard, the new Picard series, though.
We do now, yeah. And they're used really well.
Let me make a note about Leonard Nimoy. Now we already got past that point. But okay. I mean, what cracks me up about that haircut, that bowl cut, is thinking about the real life Leonard Nimoy in 1960, you know, 5, 6, 7, walking around Hollywood with that bowl cut, because it wasn't like Commander Data now or Worf. They had wigs on, you know, they didn't look like that in real life. But Nimoy is walking around and going to all these Hollywood parties with the hair cut like straight across his head.
Yes. He's wearing his white flare legged jumpsuit,
right?
And his gold chain, and he smells of high karate. And he has that bowl cut on.
Hey, baby.
And he's doing the frug or whatever they were dancing then. I'd like to neck pinch you.
Hey, baby, what's your sign?
But he's got that Mo Howard haircut. And the ladies are like,
Which brother are you in the Stooges? I'm the smart one.
So the Romulans are kind of, it's kind of a bust. Mm. The most interesting thing I think about the Romulans is the conversation that the crew have. I mean, they haven't seen him for 50 years, and they have no idea what they're going to be dealing with, and they're really tense. And for the first time in a long time, they take a really kind of hostile posture. So Riker especially is eager to make sure that, you know, shields are up and phasers are fully charged and they're ready to go to town on these folks. As soon as they materialize, let's open fire on them. And of course, obviously, Worf backs that up because Worf has some serious issues with the Romulans.
Romulans killed my father and mother.
Yes, which again becomes a huge thread later on down the road.
Right.
But again, even to the point where when they're in that conference room, that L.A. Law room that you like so much, even Data's like, you know, when I hear all this stuff, it kind of makes me think, yeah, sure, open up on them.
Maybe we should just destroy them, Captain.
Yeah, here's my imitation of Brent Spiner as Data. Are you ready?
Mm.
Yeah, you know, I've been thinking about what they said. It makes sense. I think we should open up on them. There you go.
Thank you.
But it's interesting how tense they make them, right? And I think the Romulans make them more tense than the Klingons did earlier. Granted, because they have Worf on board, but they've also been working with the Klingons for a while.
Sure.
Their relationship with the Romulans is the Romulans, and God, we talked about this way, way, way early on in the season, that the Romulans have a very structured society, and it's easy for us to imagine their society because they're built like Rome.
Right.
So in many ways, they're more of a mirror of the Federation than the Klingons are. And I would even say this plot where the Romulans are sort of skirting the neutral zone to figure out what's going on, they're basically the mirror of the Enterprise.
Also, I would like to note that this episode is building suspense properly. And all the things you're mentioning are about building suspense. And so many times in this first season, we've had kind of false suspense. And this is an example of how to really build suspense in these scenes and kind of ratchet it up from scene to scene and build the drama and make it really tense. And so it makes you feel scared about what's going to happen, even though this existential threat isn't really a thing until this episode.
Right.
I mean, I actually think there's a lot of stuff in this episode that's weird and it's all jammed up together, but I actually think it's a pretty good episode. This is part of what's good about the episode, that there is this tension and suspense and fear at the end.
Well, and you know what? That what really helps to build the suspense and develop the suspense is the sleepers, the cryogenic survivors, because there's nothing like a chemically dependent hayseed to really amp up
chemically
your suspense level.
Right. Well, I know it's a weird pairing. These should have been two separate episodes. And it's clear there's a lot of stuff that's interesting about these sleepers. Right at the beginning of the episode, they wake these people up. And they've got three survivors on the ship that was probably full of other people that had died. And you get this opening scene where they come across some mummies and dead sleepers in their cryogenic units, right?
Yes.
And so we get three of them that are from 1980 something or whatever. I don't. They're supposed to be from the time that the show was on, I'm assuming.
Right. The late 80s, early 90s.
And so you've got these out of time people. And it really, to me, this is one of my favorite kind of sci-fi stories. I love people out of time coming into the future. It's fun. It can be fun. It's really handled in a goofy way here. It's a little hit or miss. So the hayseed is this country singer, I'm guessing.
You're Sonny. Yes, Sonny, played by the delightful Leon Rippey. The thing that kills me about what you're saying is it is my favorite kind of plot too. And let's talk about a show that we all love, Buck Rogers. It builds the whole show around it. And I think about this in terms of what Will Wheaton's character, what Wesley Crusher was supposed to do. Wesley Crusher was supposed to be our way in, right?
That was my band when I worked at Chuck E. Cheese.
Wesley's Crusher?
I used to play bass in Wesley's Crusher.
I mean, he's the one that's discovering. He's got this wide-eyed sense of wonder. He's going to learn all about the Enterprise and Starfleet, and we're going to be, you know, sort of associating with him a little bit. And that's what he does at the beginning. And then that kind of tapers off. And he actually is not even in this episode, which is bizarre because it would be a great episode for him to be in. I mean, why wouldn't he want to hang out with these people and find out what's going on? It seems with his levels of curiosity, he'd be totally into this. Plus, he'd be the ideal person. We don't need him to deal with the Romulans.
It makes sense, and there's too much going on in this episode, and they should have two separate episodes, and then he would have been perfect, and Data as well. It would have been perfect to have he and Data dealing with these people from 1980s or 90s.
Especially Sonny.
Yes, and Sonny is up to all kinds of shenanigans on the ship, but all three of the sleepers really cause their own types of problems. I mean, Sonny's looking for a drink.
He's looking for a drink, but he's also looking for a snort. I mean, he's chemically dependent, right? That's why I say he's a chemically dependent A-seed.
Right.
We have three. We have Offenhaus, the capitalist. We have Sonny. Right. And then we have the most fascinating character of all, Claire.
Another fabulous female character that they've decided to give very little to do. And the actor is good. Actually, her story kind of resonates more than any of the others because the other two, they're all such stereotypes, all three of them, okay?
And oh, yeah, absolutely.
So silly. But again, this is after our episode with the Mannheims where we had Michelle Phillips, a very famous person, playing the wife of some kind of genius who's stuck on some rock in outer space. And then here you have this woman who's been saved in time, and she is and nothing saying about being a housewife, but she's a housewife. She has no sense of personality or self outside of her children.
And her husband. And this was done to her. She was frozen by her husband.
Right.
After she had an aneurysm, her husband, Donald.
Right. So he's kind of victimized her and saved her. And she doesn't want to be there. She saved her in time. And I think, I mean, I like the tension of her story because it's so real, this idea that you would wake up in the future and she's dealing with the fact that everybody she knew when she was alive is dead and her children are dead. And that's devastating. I mean,
exactly. And that's the thing that I wanted. I mean, Offenhaus is so one-dimensional, it's appalling, right? And he's, of course, a capitalist. He wants to talk to his lawyer. He seems so remarkably clueless as to be a clown. And he's as much of a clown as Sonny. The famous line, when he says to Data, why don't you come back later? And why don't you come back later on and you and me will find us a couple of low mileage pit woofies and help them build a memory, which according to Urban Dictionary is kind of like a NASCAR groupie, a pit woofie.
Have you ever heard that term before? Let me just ask.
Nor
you.
Since.
I'm glad because there's some terms that show up on this show that sometimes I go like, I didn't know a snootful from episode two.
Right. Sure.
Okay.
But he's filled with these like ridiculous sayings that we're supposed to imagine, you know, that he's walking around saying every day of his life, like, these old boys here don't need us telling them where the bear sits. It's like, what? I beg your pardon? And then he's supposed to be a musician. I'm sorry, I rant like this sometimes, as you know, but he's supposed to be a famous singer. They give him like a guitar and he never strums the goddamn thing. Not once do we see him just sort of idly strumming it.
It's not like Commander Riker and his trombone. Apparently, he really does play the trombone.
The bone. I insist you call it the bone.
He plays his bone. They don't even fake play the guitar.
And speaking of Riker, I mean, the thing is, Sonny like sort of sidles up to Data. And it is fun. The interactions are fun. And again, we've mentioned before that Brett Spiner had actually played a kind of yokel character on Night Court before.
That's true.
Some connection there, which is kind of cute. At the same time, the Sonny Riker weekend holodeck party episode. That's all I want to say. Why the hell don't they show Sonny the holodeck?
I know. Well, all of these guys, so these sleepers wake up. There's such pains in the ass that they're getting in the way of what's going on with the Romulans. And you just wonder like they don't have assholes in the future. You can't figure out a way of distracting these people. Shove them in the holodeck. Send them back to New Orleans or Paris, for crying out loud.
Oh, yeah. They could go to Paris. They'd be excited to go to Paris.
Hey, come here. Come to holodeck number 4. Open the door, holodeck, please. Now get lost. Literally, get lost. I mean, you could get lost in there for your whole life.
Do you remember Captain America, the First Avenger, one of the early Marvel Comics movies?
Sure.
He gets frozen, of course. And when he wakes up, Nick Fury is smart enough to put him in some kind of fake World War II environment, 40s environment, which he sees through pretty quickly because he's Captain America.
Oh, my God.
I can't imagine Sonny seeing through anything or Claire seeing through anything. You know, maybe Offenhaus would figure it out. Offenhaus is smart enough to figure out things like how the doors work,
right,
and how to use the comm system. Offenhaus has a good moment where he's like, you know, hey, I could just get on these comms and don't you secure them? And Picard's like, we don't have to. What's wrong with you? But it's just like the same problem we've seen throughout the show is secure the shuttlecraft, secure the transporters, secure the comm system. The hell is wrong with you people?
Excuse me, we don't have dickheads in the future.
Yeah, but what if they were talking to the Romulans and they're in the middle of like a really tense conversation and those two idiotic kids with the Chinese finger trap came in? I mean, what are you going to do then?
Episode 2, everyone.
3. Episode 3, Code of Honor.
Is that true?
Yeah, of course it is.
Okay. You would think that you would have this place locked down by now. I remember coming of age where Picard got his balls busted about all the things that went wrong on the ship. And then it's like, did he take any notes? Can you lock something down like the comms or protect the warp core or keep the shuttle the shuttle bay?
No. What if Sonny got like, you know, got drunk one night and took a piss in the warp core? There's a lot of problems here.
Hey, robot. Hey, Tin Man. Let's take one of these shuttlecraft off for a little joyride.
Hey there, Mr. Robot. Why don't you come back later and you'll meet and fight a couple of low mileage Romulan pit woofies?
Data, what the hell? And he's like, I just wanted to see what would happen. Data's so curious.
But I want to go back to the Sonny and Riker weekend holodeck party episode. I think you were too quick to dismiss that.
Okay.
Because I could totally see, like, Riker with his bone and Sonny with his git box.
Right. They look out in the audience and Riker's like, there's Minuet. Picard comes into the holodeck because they don't lock any of the doors. And he's like, oh, yeah. What the hell's going on? What's Minuet doing in here?
Yeah, and Sonny's got his git box, and he's like, I'm a pickin', and Riker's like, and I'm a bonin'. I don't see what a problem is there. I mean, that to me is an episode I want to see.
It's like Star Trek hee-haw.
We salute the population of Romulus. Population 20 billion. Salute.
For those of you who are way too young and way too classy to ever watch Hee-Haw.
Oh my God.
It was, I can't even begin to describe it, but it was a show that thrived on this notion of comedic yokels.
Yeah.
Buck Owens and Roy Clark, a couple of great musicians.
Yeah, it was the show that was on at both sets of my grandparents' house in the afternoons.
Yeah.
And I remember it was on, like, I don't know how it worked. It was back-to-back Lawrence Welk and then Hee-Haw. Yeah. You know, when I was like 10, and it was like, when is this torture going to end? What is happening at my grandparents' house?
So basically, it was a kind of riff on Roden Martin's Laugh-In, but instead of being cool, it was just kind of hick-centered on country music and the rural rather than pop culture and
the
stereotypical kind of farmer's daughter type stuff.
How much of this show do you think Wayland, the 20th century expert, knows about?
Okay, let's get back to him for a minute, because you brought him up earlier. Again, it's really vexing to me because it's like this is the one time they really need him.
Because we saw him in The Big Goodbye. He was asked to go into the holodeck and go to the 1940s so that he could give a little play-by-play to Jean-Luc and help him figure stuff out because he was an expert of 20th century. Wait. Who's that charming fellow who got shot and almost died in episode 7? Riker, remember the 20th century expert? Air quotes.
You mean Lieutenant Youngstrong?
No, number one. That's the 19th century expert. I'm talking about Commander Wayland, the 20th century expert.
Oh, well, due to budget cuts, we had to combine his position with Commander Farmalot, who is sort of a hee-haw expert.
Commander Wayland, my ready room immediately.
Is he Commander Wayland? He can't be Commander Wayland.
I just made that up. I don't know what his rank is.
I mean, that'd be great if there was like a whole command structure for people like Waylon.
Yeah, they're all in this wing. They like, can you imagine their like Taco Tuesday nights? They're all getting together and talking about, let me tell you my favorite show from the 20th century. You'll never believe this. There were all these wealthy Hollywood actors and they sat around and pretended like they were country yokels. Can you believe it?
Ha ha ha.
Ha. Oh my God.
The other thing that bothers me about this plot, though, is that the Enterprise crew is so, and the plot itself is so condescending, that these people are not presented in any way as, I mean, just a normal person for the 20th century would be absolutely fascinating. But instead, they got this guy, Offenhaus, who is played by a very well-traveled character actor named Peter Mark Richmond, who's been on a million different things. Most notoriously, he played Chrissy Snow's dad, Reverend Snow, in Three's Company.
Oh my God, that's what you remember him from.
Totally. I saw that guy and I said, that's Chrissy's dad.
I remember that character. I wouldn't have put it together like that, but that's funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was on it. I mean, the guy's on a gazillion, like so many of these actors on the show. He's been on a gazillion things.
And instead of doing something interesting with him, he just like runs around and fumes and doesn't seem to understand that his lawyer and their law firm probably doesn't exist anymore.
Right.
It's just, it stretches credibility, right? He's there as an easy target.
But it's the heavy hand that we've talked about in many of these episodes. We're trying to make a critique on modern culture, and they're painting these people with these kind of ridiculous characteristics that over-accentuate who they are. I'm not sure why there is this triad of people who had to be these representatives of, I mean, obviously America, because there wasn't anybody else from Earth, but those people were the ones that maybe died in the other, you know, the other cases there.
Right.
These three super extreme stereotypes of, you know, white culture. It's funny because it's at once, you know, it's a critique, but then like thing, it's also insulting too. I mean, this is your audience,
right?
This is your television audience. At least Claire is. I mean, Claire is probably the only one that's at home watching TV, but it's kind of like, you know, what is this saying about, you know, a homemaker in the 1980s that they're ridiculous?
But see, in some ways too, though, this is what I think is definitely one of the attractions of Star Trek is like, this is to me is kind of a dream thing. Cryonics is really stupid, right? I mean, cryogenics is one of those things that you can't believe people fell for, right? So we're going to freeze your ass until we can figure out what's wrong with you. And most famously is a Red Sox all-star baseball player, a guy named Ted Williams, who they actually decapitated him.
Yeah, that's the way you do it, though. That's the way. And what the more famous, though, is Walt Disney. I mean, there's rumors that Walt Disney was frozen like this.
Well, but we know for a fact that Ted Williams was decapitated, right? And they're keeping his head in a jar like Futurama, thinking that one day, I guess they're going to put it onto a robot body or something.
I know.
And so even that in and of itself is kind of like, oh, come on, really? That's what these people are going to do?
It's so weird. They're like, wait, hold on a second. Like the cryogenics places are like, you know, we can't store our whole bodies. But, you know, what if we just cut their heads off and put them in a jar?
Well, storage space is expensive. Have you ever had to have an external storage space?
Of course, but it's ridiculous. It's like saying, why don't you just go ahead and cut out their brain then? And that you even have less space. And there is real tech going on right now where scientists are exploring this idea about downloading your consciousness eventually into a machine. So these are things that are an extension of cryogenics. And I mean, you and I could be doing this podcast by the time we get to the like episode 174, we could be...
We might actually get to the end of this show.
We could be sounding like Stephen Hawking coming out of some kind of computer speaker somewhere.
Yeah, very true.
Welcome to episode 176, Andrew.
Do we want to talk about any of the crew members?
Well, Crusher gets not much to do.
Right.
But Crusher, I would like to point this out because this is the single most important thing that happens to Crusher in this episode is that she actually gets her bottom padded.
Yes. By Sonny.
Yeah. And he's hitting her up for medical marijuana of the 24th century. It just shows how old the show is.
Right.
I mean, the idea that you would never even have an actor pat another actor's ass on network TV in the modern world, and this idea that it was supposed to be funny, and then Gates McFadden is like startled because it's like, well, nobody's touched my ass like that since my husband died.
It's also disturbing because this is it for Gates, right, for an entire season.
Oh, that's true. We don't get her next season at all.
Yeah, Dr. Crusher's last hurrah is getting her butt smacked.
Adios, Beverly. Catch you in season 3.
Let me give you a little pat in the rear as a bon voyage. And that may have been it. You know, she may have been like, yeah, I'm good for season 2. Pat, pat, pat. Okay.
Listen. Gates, spend the rest of season 2 working on your glutes. That's my great bird.
Caw, caw.
There you go. Thank you.
What I was going to say about the Claire thing is, you know, Troy comes... And Picard tries to push these people off on tries to push them off on Riker, who apparently just ignores him and moves on. But then, you know, Troy tells Troy, could you get down here and do something about this? And I get it that it's a casting thing. There's got to be other people on this ship, right, who could be handling these folks.
Well, freaking Waylon.
They send poor Troy in there, and she just goes immediately to the crying Claire, right? And pulls up all this information, does this Ancestry.com thing on that screen. And the first thing that struck me, you know, they have these little computer screens in various rooms, like Picard has one in his ready room, is how small and awful those screens are. Because she has to scroll, you know, in order to get her whole family lineage on there. And I'm like, come on, are you kidding me? This is sci-fi. You had a great hologram thing going for a while in the early episodes. Now you got like this dinky Chromebook.
But they can also just talk to the computer. I mean, I don't know why they don't just say to the computer, you know, like, Majel, tell us where her family is. And
Majel, could you drop us off at Best Buy so we could get a widescreen monitor?
Siri, where's this chick's family?
Alexa, find relatives.
I can't do that. Yeah, that...
Alexa, stop. Jesus Christ, so, fucking robots.
Alexa, shut the fuck up.
I would love to wake up in the 21st century. I would love to wake up aboard the Enterprise.
Oh my God. Yeah, blow your mind.
Yeah, it would be totally cool. It's like anything I want, I could just have materialize. Okay, cool. What, I can go to this holodeck and do anything I want? Cool. I don't have to work? Great.
Right.
I don't really see what the problem is here. I don't see what the stress is.
Well, the stress is what happens to her, and it does beg the question, like Doug, her husband, froze her. So
Donald.
And she has an
actual, Donald.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Donald, her husband, froze her and puts her in this cryogenic sleep. But where, I mean, maybe Donald was one of the dead people next to her.
Yeah, possibly.
Where is he? Why wasn't he in the future with her?
Yeah, well, she says that, you know, Donald couldn't bear to live without me, so he froze me. And I'm like, how's that better?
Yeah, but he froze her because she couldn't deal with her death, and saying, like, knowing that in the future she'll wake up. And so he doesn't have to grieve for her in his 1988 reality, because she's not really dead. She'll be born again.
Well, he's probably out cruising for pit loafies, you know, while she's frozen. Are we supposed to think that he's sitting at home just like, she'll be here any minute now. She'll be here any minute. That cure for aneurysms. Let me just keep looking at the newspaper. Oh, look at that. They're really working on them.
Did I ever tell you what happened to my first wife? She's in cryogenic sleep.
But the thing is, okay, so these people die, right? I mean, they die. Right. Crusher brings them back to life. Basically, they're zombies. Crusher brings them back to life. She's able to fix them and reanimate them, which is something we just sort of gloss over. We just kind of move on.
It's the single biggest thing that happens actually in the episode, but she fixes all their maladies, because in this far future, all these things they died from can be fixed.
So Claire died of an aneurysm.
Yep.
And he thought, I will freeze her, because I'm sure any day now, science will find a way to cure death.
It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make a lick of sense.
No, but it's like cutting Ted Williams' head off, right? It doesn't really make sense. Do they think they're going to come up with like a robot body? Is that what's going to happen?
Right. It's silly. It's so silly. I could buy into the whole put my whole body on ice and put it somewhere.
But not after you're dead. And hey, you're going to find a cure for death?
Well, the controversial part of cryogenics, though, is that they really think that the way of working around this is killing you basically while you're still alive, is by freezing you while you're alive, which you're not allowed to do. But some people suggest, people like Walt Disney and people, very wealthy people, have done this very thing. Like at the end of their life, they've frozen them so they could be reanimated later on.
I mean, once you cut your head off, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, I like the rest of my body. I don't want to be just a head. I don't know if I'd be happy about living.
Oh, no, I'm good. I'm good with it. I mean, if they wanted to cut my head off and put it on a different body, depending on the body they choose, I'm totally good with that.
But, I mean, how's he going to play baseball again after that? I mean, Jesus Christ.
24th century baseball.
Can we note Worf at least here?
Yes, we can. What about him?
Worf as a resident dumbass in this episode. We've pointed this out many times about the race politics going on.
Sure.
About casting an African-American person as a Klingon and then treating him like he's a big dummy. It gets complicated because he's comic relief sometimes and it's funny. But then in this episode, there's three big Worf insults. And the first is when they go into this cryogenic ship, Worf is going to blow the door open with his phaser. And Data's like, nah, because there's clearly a handle on the door, which
right.
We from, you know, our century understand that you just pull the handle and it opens up. And apparently nowhere has Worf seen an actual manual handle, right? But I would like to point out Annie with the, what was that? Annie with the silken hair? What was her?
Annie with the golden hair.
Annie with the golden hair had pushed a button in her cabin, you know, not 18 episodes ago, and the drawer opened up. So, I mean, there's a sense of things opening by pushing or pulling things. And the idea that Worf's so dumb that he can't understand it is, you know, it's funny that he's going to blast it open, but it's really pretty insulting that he's not smart enough that it takes an android to tell him that he needs
to notice a doorknob when he sees it.
Picard tells him, you know, he gets all upset about the Romulans and he's going on a bit of a tantrum about the Romulans and being worried about them. And Picard has to tell him to control your emotions. You know, his emotions are so out of control that he needs to be told to shut up.
Yeah, his emotions are the issue.
But it's, you know, Riker's also saying things like that are provocations for war. When Worf does it, then he has to be told to control his emotions. And then the Romulans, when they get on screen and Worf says something that they hear, one of the Romulans has silenced your dog, referring to Worf.
Right.
The show's got to do some work in regards to Worf.
We got to be better here. We got to be better.
We do. It's not okay.
How do you feel getting to 25 episodes?
Oh my God, we are at the end of 25. Oh man, you know what I feel like is I need a nap.
Oh no, it's pretty exhausting. I feel like I need to be frozen.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind waking up, you know, however many hundred years later it was, but I wouldn't mind also having my friends and family with me if that's okay. I think it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
It's a big, big bummer.
And I'm excited about next time, where what we're going to do is best and worst, where we talk about the best things of the season, talk about the worst things of the season. You'll hear our sort of omnibus opinions. Omnibus opinions.
We're going to chew the space fat about season one. If you were thinking this is the end of season one right here, you're wrong. There's another episode in store for you.
We haven't spent enough time on this season. Let's prolong it. This is the delightful Admiral Andrew.
And I'm Commander Dave E. Dave.
And we hope you'll join us next time for another exciting episode of STTNG's on another Star Trek podcast.
Let's go mind the store.
Wah, 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 wah. I decided to do it like the end of a match game theme. Like,
Asha.
And that is the end of season one. For reals this time. But before we go, it's our best of worst of as we go back and look at episodes 1 through 25 of STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast. There's always time to rewind. We'll get in touch with Armus.
I can pull spaceships down from outer space. That's an entity.
You're a powerful stain, Armus. That's all you are.
You're hurting my feelings.
Don't forget the galaxy classiness of the Enterprise D.
Yes, it's a family ship. I don't know if everybody is aware of that by now.
We'll visit old friends like Nancy Reagan. Nancy?
Dave? It's me, Nancy. Listen, I'm going to come by later in the van, but I want you to smoke this doobie with me.
And there will be robots galore.
And talks like this because that's how robots talk.
I love that.
Thank you.
Those filthy, filthy uniforms.
Commander, you've left a lot of data on this one.
Oh, no.
And dolphins. Flippin' dolphins.
Great dolphin. I gotta make one of those in a replicator.
Motherfucking dolphins.
Great job, Harry. Carve more extinct fish.
More dolphins than you could shake a targ at.
No way.
Not another Flipper podcast.
Hold on to your hats and glasses, folks.
Is this a galaxy class vessel, you say? Huh?
It's our version of a clip show. On the next episode of STTNG's Not Another Star Trek Podcast.
Excuse me, we don't have dickheads in the future.